But we have a formula for like a 90 second ad that if you would like, James, I can share with you.
Gee, let me think. Okay. Yes, please. The 90 second ad formula.
Okay, cool.
Is that how long the video goes for? Or is that how long the formula takes to talk about?
I wish it took 90 seconds to talk about. It takes a lot longer to talk about, but your ad ends up being 90 seconds in length.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. This is episode 563, How to Promote Your Book on YouTube. And for this episode, I need a YouTube expert. So this is where we cue the amazing, the incredibly handsome and talented Tom Breeze. Welcome.
Thank you, James. That's very kind of you to introduce me like that.
Well, you are not a stranger to this show. You were here in episode 483, 484, and 485, where we really went into YouTube advertising stuff. I'll just say stuff because it was good. We did. we had case studies. We talked about the message and why YouTube and all of that. Today, I want to run a hypothetical, Tom. Are you up for the challenge?
I am up for the challenge. Let's go for it.
Okay. Let's say someone listening to this podcast or even recording this podcast has published a book. Mm-hmm. How would you promote your book on YouTube? That was the question that was put to me by a very motivated listener / publishing author podcaster. I thought it'd be good to have an episode covering this topic because coincidentally, this is exactly where I'm up to right now, having just published my book called Work Less, Make More on Amazon store near you. But I thought maybe it would be good to put a video up there on YouTube. I've occasionally been to YouTube watching surfing videos, of course, and sometimes I'm targeted by marketing material before I get to watch the good stuff. I see people talking about their, you know, online business or their business model or how many cars they have in the garage and lots of books and all sorts of knowledge and stuff. Yeah. So I'm just wondering, is this a good medium for someone like me to consider to let people know about my book?
We've done a lot of book promotions on YouTube and they've always worked really well. I think the fact that most people go to YouTube looking for information. They want to know something, do something, potentially buy something, and they're there to learn. And that's the sort of time where if you can get in front of that audience with a book is naturally one of those things where we perceive instant value. It is like a, okay, this is a physical thing that's been, a lot of work has been put into this. I can see the book. The person's probably holding it up and talking about some of the chapters perhaps. And so it's always served our clients really well to have a book. And if you have it like a book funnel as well, so should someone buy the book and you have an upsell or maybe along with the book, there's some sort of video training or something on those lines that go with the book, or if there's something like that, then it can work really, really effectively from a standpoint of like creating a funnel that will be breaking even, if not generating a lot of profit from day one. So you can really scale up campaigns as well with book launches. And not just to say it has to be a launch either. Normally, for especially with YouTube, you can get these things where it's like the funnel just keeps on performing. It becomes like this evergreen. You're promoting the book, you're running the ads, and you get to the point where you're ROI positive, and you can just keep on scaling and improving the campaigns over time. And so when you get to that point, you can sell 100, 200, 500 books a day sometimes. I mean, we've got to 500 books a day in a launch, and that was really pushing it for quite a broad niche. But that worked really well. But yeah, getting 100 book sales a day from YouTube isn't unlikely if you're in a niche where it's a popular thing. So I think that, like, for me, YouTube advertising and using a book to promote a business is a solid funnel to be promoting.
Right. Well, that's really interesting. So the first things I've noted there, Tom can help me sell 500 books a day. I wrote that down. Second thing was
straight away. Yeah.
I'm thinking about things like the workbook that people can go and download from my website that we link to from the book, and also the extra chapter that is a downloadable. Mm. And we do collect an email address for the extra chapter. I have noticed with our Facebook promotion that we've started selling memberships to Superfast Business every single day from that campaign. Nice. So our advertising has been cash flow positive, which is a good indicator, I suppose, if we're going to switch mediums. And also jotted down here things like video training. So are you saying if you're going to publish a book, it might be thoughtful to consider what the next stage is after someone reads the book and to bake that into the book and to provide extra resources?
Yeah. So a lot of the times clients will come to us and say, hey, look, we've got this book. We've been promoting it on Facebook, been doing pretty well. We want to carbon copy on YouTube, basically. And in those circumstances, there's normally a, here's our funnel with the book starting at the very beginning. We've done lots of different types of promotions for books. So it could be like giving the first chapter away for free and then downloading the audiobook and then buying the actual physical book, or we've done like postage and packaging only, so the book's free, just pay for PMP. We've done loads of different types of promotions like that. And whenever I've looked at focusing on a book sale, there's two mindsets really. There's one which is like, is it a ROI play, or is it a branding play, or is it a bit of both? And so if it's like straight ROI and they're saying this book has been out there already, it's got quite a lot of branding, we just want to make sure it's a ROI positive campaign, there's one way of doing it. And that's kind of like looking at it almost like a funnel. So having things associated with the book, like a video training or something else that can be downloadable, means that any person that buys shows a lot of intent to say, I want to learn more from you. And having instant like, well, the book's being shipped out to you. In the meantime, would you like to have this video training? It costs this much. That's a great way of making it ROI positive and continuing to give the viewer a great experience. And that's kind of like one way of doing an ROI positive funnel. The other way, which is what I'm thinking about, because I know that we've talked about this a lot as well. I've got a book coming out in the new year. And in that scenario, I'm kind of looking at it purely as a brand play. Like I run an agency and that's kind of like 95% of the revenue for the business. And I just want the book to be in more hands. And I don't mind going ROI negative as long as I know that, like, okay, well, if we pick up a few agency clients in the future, that'll pay for all the promotion we've done with the book. So it's a slightly different process with that one. And that would be more a case of like building a following on YouTube that is very useful for you as an asset as well. So then when it comes to the book sale, you'll have that as well. So it's a consideration of kind of what you want from a book, I suppose, and keeping that in mind. But I would always say if you've got assets that go with the book, it's going to help the promotion of it, because if you can get ROI positive on a campaign and you know you can just scale up, then the book is a great branding play. And if it's ROI positive, you can just keep on pushing it.
Right. So I guess it's a little bit of a mixture for me at this point, because the point of this first book is to make people aware of me, because I've been like a bit of a secret behind the scenes sort of a guy. And I imagine some other people are already known and they'd put out a new book on a specific technical thing, or, you know, they might be the AdWords person, or, you know, in your case, you're a YouTube master. So it makes sense for you to fill your agency with leads from that. In this case, my coaching service is definitely an interesting destination that I would like people to get to. But first, they have to know about me. So I might consider this a two-step, so to speak, where I could build a really highly qualified audience. And then the next book is going to be more the technical, I think, based on the feedback that I'm getting, just jotting down all of the questions, and I'll make more solutions. So, you know, when I first contacted you and said, Tom, would you like to talk to me about what you've seen work well? Because, you know, I like to go to the source and say what's working. I was just thinking in more basic terms of, you know, what sort of video could I make? I've got access to a video camera and a quiet place to record stuff. And I was wondering, what should I record? And then you were sort of putting forward this idea, well, hang on, you want to have a look at this as an overall campaign. Like, what's the objective here? And that's a good discipline to do, because we do get caught up in the smaller steps. So if I had a blank piece of paper here and I said, okay, Tom, I'm interested in a little bit of branding, and it's okay if people come through and it subsidizes my costs, but I don't have to be hardcore ROI at this point, what sort of things would I be wanting to assemble to be ready to run ads for this?
So my mindset on this has changed in the last month or so because of some of the changes that are happening on YouTube. So one of the big things that's going to be happening on YouTube in the coming year is something called YouTube Reels. And I'm so excited about it because I'll go back to why this makes a difference to your book launch. So the reason I feel like this is going to change the game for YouTube a little bit is because right now people go to YouTube normally when they want, only when they want to go and do something or learn something. You wouldn't necessarily go there and think, oh, I really want to check in with my favorite person. You might do that on Facebook, but you wouldn't do that on YouTube so much. YouTube Reels are coming out, which are going to be like Instagram stories. And there's going to be a 30-second spot where you can film directly from your phone straight to your YouTube channel, and it will save that video as well in a certain playlist. But then YouTube will have a feed for every user. So if you're on YouTube, you'll start to get these feeds from people that you've subscribed to. And I think it will become this place where you go on a daily basis. It'll be this place where you check in, you see videos from people that you love to follow. And I know, James, if you were on YouTube and had a huge presence there and you were playing kind of recording videos, like behind the scenes videos or something along those lines, that's something I would definitely subscribe to and just see your videos every single day. A bit like why you would go to Instagram in the same way. So I feel like YouTube is changing slightly. And if you're an early adopter, all these things, you get kind of huge traction from the very beginning. So from a branding play with YouTube, I'd probably look at it now as a, what can you do to build a following very quickly on YouTube? And I would say I would run an ad that would be to get subscribers. We've started doing this with a few of our clients as more of a kind of a push to see what a subscriber's worth. At the moment, we're kind of aiming to be around about 20 to 25 cents per subscriber. But if you get a subscriber onto a channel and you build it quickly and you know that you can get in touch with them every single time you release a new video, it means you've got this huge asset that you're kind of growing this list on YouTube so that as soon as you release a new video, ping on everybody's mobiles, James has just released a new video. And I know if I saw that, I would press play. If I knew that content was good and people get to know you really quickly, I feel like I'd just run, I would, and this is what I'm going to be doing, I'm going to be running a few ads just to see if I can get subscribers for very cheap and build a massive presence on YouTube that I can get in touch with. I think that that's kind of like almost like the new email marketing somewhat.
Right, it's what I call a list guarantee where you want to be able to access people via push notifications. So I have that push crew doing it for my website. I've got iTunes doing it for my podcasts. I've got my app doing it for subscribers of my app.
Yeah.
It basically just alerts them. There's new content, like the spider finding out there's a fly landed on the spider web, you know.
Yeah.
It can come running. So you think that it's a good idea to just have, you know, really encourage people to subscribe to a channel and to put lots of really interesting stuff there that they could subscribe to, and the video would point them to that. Would it have an overview of what sort of things they could expect, or is it a sample of what's on that channel?
So here's the exciting thing about this. So as soon as you get a subscriber, let's say, for example, you're running an ad and you've got a subscriber for 20 cents, for example, and you're able to spend a lot of money just like building that list on YouTube. Really relevant. You're targeting people in the normal ways on YouTube so that you know you're getting in front of a good audience. It's not like, I know some people have done this sort of thing in the past where they've kind of promoted to countries like India, for example, and just gone crazy and got loads of subscribers just to, for a vanity perspective. And so it's like, hey, I've got a million subscribers, but they're not actually going to be proper customers, so to speak, and not all the time anyway. And so you'd run your ads to your normal audience, targeting people in the normal countries, your buyers basically. And what you want to do there is, so you build a subscriber list. But the great thing is, as soon as you get a subscriber, inside of your advertising on YouTube, you can target your subscribers. So you can say, anyone that subscribes to my channel, I want to run ads to those people. So the user experience would be like, hey, I've just seen this video from James. He's asked me for a micro commitment of just subscribing to his channel. Sure, I'll do that. And so many people do that compared to click to a website and sign up to something. So you just start this minute micro engagement with them. You're releasing organic videos all the time anyway with these YouTube reels that are coming out and just normal videos as well on YouTube. But also you can advertise to them by targeting them in your remarketing lists. And then you don't have to pay the expensive places. So if you're targeting to run your ad on YouTube in front of a marketing video, for example, it's going to cost you a bit more money than it would if you were advertising in front of like a dog and cat video, I don't know, whatever, or a surfing video, let's say. So I can target you as a subscriber whenever you're watching anything on YouTube. And it, so it means it's super cheap. And at that point, I keep on engaging with you, not just by my organic stuff, but my ads as well. Imagine what's going to happen. Like, so I see a video from you. It says, hey, look, I've got some awesome stuff to share with you. I'm going to be talking about this, that, and the other. All you need to do is subscribe. Obviously, that's probably the worst written copy for an ad ever, but you get the picture. And you're going to hit this subscribe button, which is a big old big button in the middle of the video. So it's really easy to click that and subscribe. Then I start getting more and more organic videos from you, but also I start getting ads from you. Now, the ads I would do would be like to promote the book. That's what I would do at that point. I'd go and promote the book anyway from normal YouTube ads, but I would keep an eye on whether it's better for you to get a subscriber first and then advertise that subscriber list. So instead of just going straight to a cold audience.
So it's exactly what people have been doing on Facebook. And I just use that as an example because I think a lot of people are familiar with that. You know, stage one, put pieces of content out there, boost them, run ads, and accumulate a list of people who have watched a certain amount of a video or subscribed to the page. And then stage two, advertise only to those people. So you've cutting out the ones that aren't that interesting. You're sorting out your metal filings from the wood chips and then you're just turning on the magnet.
Exactly. And what we're just noticing so far is that the people that actually take action and subscribe, because it's quite a new thing on YouTube as well to do that. I mean, imagine if you saw an ad that you, or some content on YouTube that you kind of liked, and at the end of it, they said, hey, look, if you like this stuff, we've got a load more videos and I'm going to be releasing more videos about this. All you need to do is subscribe. It's kind of like, okay, well, cool. I don't need to leave my name and email again. And I don't need to be kind of get caught and lost in the kind of email list kind of scenario where you're going to get a load of spam probably sent through to you. With this, it's like, just one button, hit subscribe, and it's easy. It's straight from the mobile phone. It's kind of like super easy. I think that that, as a, you build a brand on YouTube, you build this huge following there. And then anytime you want to go live on YouTube, or anytime you want to create an organic video, or anytime you want to run an ad, you're basically going back to that list who've already subscribed. But YouTube is a platform where people spend time on. Like with Facebook, it feels like you're speeding through your newsfeed. And then I find, I don't know about you, James, but I know I go on my newsfeed and I'm like, oh, okay, I get a load of rubbish about Trump normally at the moment. And
who?
Then I kind of like, yeah. So I scroll through and I'm like,
cryptocurrencies, the big one right now.
Bitcoin. Yeah.
So, yeah, that'll all fade away when everyone gets wiped out at some point or gets bored with it. I've had to trim and tailor my feed. But the funny thing is, as a marketer now, I'm not actually on Facebook too much.
Mm.
I spend a lot more time surfing the waves than surfing the internet because I think it's quite a disease. It's a real trap of spinning the wheels. And it's by design. That's what they're trying to get you on there. So, all of these things are good for us marketers when you've got an ad. They're hooking people in. And that's why I can totally relate to what you're saying. I'm sure YouTube are paying attention to what's working with Facebook, and having subscribers sounds like a very smart thing to do to be able to reach people in case the situation changes and to be able to target very cost effectively and precisely. What I'm hearing from you, and I think you've said this to me offline before, but YouTube is sort of still in that phase where it's a tremendous opportunity in the same way that AdWords was a decade ago and that Facebook has been for the last few years, and YouTube is still a great opportunity for people who are early to the party.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, it's still a great place to be. And I think that the mix between organic and paid now is kind of like coming together. It felt very much like companies could just quite simply just run ads. And you can still do that for sure. And I just think there's a slightly more effective method sometimes when it comes to any launch or any promotion. If you've got this huge following on YouTube that you've built up and you've kind of nurtured naturally, just because you're going to be doing this content anyway on these different social media platforms, you might as well do it for YouTube as well. That's the beauty, is that you can then use that audience to put more promotional material in front of. And if you're kind of like a good bit of content, and then a promotional piece as well, people love that. But you can do it in a way where you actually advertise to your subscribers. And so you'd have almost like two campaigns, one to get the subscriber, one to advertise to it. And I just feel like it's such an exciting space to be in. It's definitely not as easy as Facebook. I think a lot of people can get early success with Facebook. And then when they start spending some money on Facebook, when they kind of like see a good ROI and they start spending money, they can sometimes get some funny experiences where they might hit a ceiling or they might hit like fatigue really quickly, and they kind of have to keep them on top of things. With YouTube, it feels like you're more kind of working with the algorithm of AdWords, where you are, which has been around for a lot longer, and it's kind of getting in front of people based on their search behavior. So you're getting in front of people who are actually looking for this stuff, and so it ends up becoming more of a tweaking process than it does a complete overhaul. And oh, we need a completely new video, or we need a completely new ad now, and quick, change it all over and start again on Facebook. With YouTube, it's very much like, okay, cool, this ad's working, let it run. Like, just keep it going, and you won't see these huge fluctuations. Kind of when you get a good thing going, you can optimize it and you can scale it, and just keeps on working for you. And platform of AdWords helps you. It says, here's how much more you could spend, kind of without getting fatigue. And that's a beautiful thing, because it just helps you with the promotion. But it can be a little bit more complicated when you first look at the dashboard of AdWords. It's like, wow, there's a lot going on. So that's the pros and cons, I suppose, of YouTube versus somewhere like Facebook.
Right, so we're on YouTube, we're trying to build subscribers. What are we putting up? Like, we have to load some media, I suppose, to get in front of people and target certain places.
You have to remember that with YouTube, you have to create a really good video. The benefit you have with Facebook is you can release the video and then you have all the text around the post as well. The video can almost just be the attention grabber, and then if someone likes that kind of that idea of that content, they can then go and read more. With YouTube, you don't have that luxury. So it's purely just, here's your video, and that's all you've got. So you can't rely on the written word to help you out around the video, so to speak. It's just the video itself. So the video needs to be really powerful, and people are starting to expect a lot more quality as well. A lot of data's coming out from YouTube just showing people that, like, if you film it 1080 and have a really good quality ad and well produced and edited, then it performs a lot better. And people are just starting to expect that higher quality. It's a place you go to learn, a place you go to find out more information, a place you want to trust in the videos. And so higher quality is important as well. But people are there to learn. So you want to make sure you give them a good experience as well. It's not purely like a promotional platform, unless you're getting in front of like a subscribers. You can, if you've given good content subscriber already, you can do like a 30-second TV style ad to that audience, because they know you, they like you, they trust you, and they're much more likely to buy from you as a result. But we have a formula for like a 90-second ad that, if you would like, James, I can share with you.
Gee, let me think. Okay. Yes, please. The 90-second ad formula.
Okay, cool.
Is that how long the video goes for, or is that how long the formula takes to talk about?
I wish it took 90 seconds to talk about. It takes a lot longer to talk about, but your ad ends up being 90 seconds in length. Right. So this is called EDUCATE. It's an acronym. So it's kind of obviously each letter means something. And EDUCATE is a play on words as well. So it's educate as an ad. There we go. Every time I feel like I explain it, I feel like I'm teaching people to suck eggs, and I feel like I'm becoming really patronizing. So I need to find out a better way of explaining that. So the A stands for the aim, and really that's the aim of the viewer that you're getting in front of. Like, what is it that they really want? And also, who are they? So just from your standpoint, James, like, who tends to be your audience? What's kind of like, if you were to paint a picture of what that audience or that one viewer looks like, what would that person look like?
So for me, my person reading this book, probably already a little bit interested in the online thing, maybe got a foot in it and doing some stuff, but starting to feel overloaded and overwhelmed and getting a bit frustrated at all the heard people talk about stuff, but it's not translating in their business and they just need to shift gears on it, but not exactly sure which gears to shift.
Got it. Okay, nice. So what if they got that gear shifted in the right place and they kind of got the result they were looking for, what will that give them?
For most of them, they'll be able to quit their job or stop stressing so much about if this thing's going to work out or not.
Great. Okay, perfect. So that's kind of like, I would keep that in mind. At this stage, I go through this three times, by the way. The first time I go through it, I just start making notes in this aim section. So like, who is it and what is it they really want? So they kind of probably want to have a new style of life and a break away from their existing life. And they know it's possible because they've probably seen it before, but they don't know how to get there. I've seen a lot of other people do it. And so they're excited by that as well. Cool. Anything that comes up, this is kind of like a bit like improv, if you've ever seen, or you obviously know improv, it's like you never say the word no, you just keep on saying yes, that's great, and more. And so kind of like with any scripting process, we never shut it down. We just say, yeah, that's great, stick it down and keep going, even if you think it's a terrible idea, just stick it in there anyway. So that's kind of the aim. We end up kind of like really focusing on who we're kind of getting in front of and what do they want, because if we can say that at the start of the video, it does a massive thing. Because if you remember, on YouTube, most of the videos you'll see are pretty irrelevant or annoying. So if you start off with like, hey, if you're this person, you're looking to gain this, like in the first 3 seconds of your ad, then the viewer's going to be like, wow, this sounds relevant to me. And that in itself is a huge, like, attention-grabbing thing. It doesn't have to be like a huge pattern interrupt or schema violation that we may have talked about before in the past. It's more a case of just like, sometimes just being relevant to the viewer is enough. It's a break in the natural pattern enough just to be relevant on a YouTube ad. So we start with the aim, like, who is it we're getting in front of and what do they actually want? And then the D is the difficulty, which you alluded to a little bit previously, but this sounds like it's going to be frustration and overwhelm and that type of area, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. The promise of what they thought they were getting into hasn't panned out yet. There's a disconnect.
Great. Okay.
It seems a lot easier for the gurus and they're really struggling because maybe they're pursuing the wrong business model or they're working on the wrong things. They're almost always doing too many things themselves. Mm-hmm. Maybe they haven't figured out of all the things they can sell, which ones are better yet.
Nice. Okay, cool. So when we go through this, if I can, at this point, when I'm scripting for clients, I'll do my very best to try and personify this problem or this difficulty that people are having. So, you know, if you ever see like an advert on TV and it might be, let's say, for example, they're selling some sort of kitchen cleaner or something like that on those lines. The kitchen cleaner is there to get rid of the germs. And the germs, if you were to talk about exactly what germs they are, like the scientific name of them, people would just be like, this makes no difference to me whatsoever. So the way they do it on TV with ads is they will personify the germs into this like green little monster or something like that. And then it shows it being killed by the kind of kitchen cleaner. What we're doing is what we're looking to do in this difficulty is try and work out a way where we can turn this difficulty or this overwhelm into personification of that. So we can point at it and say that there is the problem. So it feels like they can finally identify this problem as something. So it's not just overwhelm on a problem and kind of like it just, they can't put their finger on it. It's much more a case of they just like look at it and think, I can point at this thing now and say, yeah, that is it. Because as soon as you can...
So it's the enemy.
Exactly. But it's personified so they can point their finger at it. But if you can define that for them, they instantly start trusting you because they realize you know more than they do straight away. They're like, finally someone's explained this to me before. Now finally you've just explained it to me. I've never had that before. Yeah, you're so right. That is the problem. So that can come out a number of different ways. I've just written a script actually for a software company that helps you sell products online and it just really helps you out with like just making it super simple to kind of get your website created and start selling your stuff online. And it was a similar thing. So it's frustration. It feels like, I've got all this, like, I know that people are doing this and I know that kind of like, I've got this great idea and this value to share, but I just don't know how to get there. I keep on reading and keep on getting all this stuff, but it just feels like there's so much jargon and conflicting advice from different people. It's difficult. And it feels like everything has just got too complicated and it's too difficult to actually get started. And a slightly older audience, about 40 to 60 audience range. And we've picked on millennials, basically. That's become the slight enemy. It's like, oh, it's fine for my son, or it's fine for my daughter, or if it's fine for these millennial types, they know all this stuff, but I don't. I'm not like, so it's an easy one. I know it's like a millennials get the scapegoat for everything right now. And I'm actually, I think I fall into the category of millennials, but it's like super geeks and millennials feels like, yeah, you can point the finger at those people and blame them and say, kind of feels like it feels a kind of a liberating, but like, yeah, they can do it, but I can't do it. It's like, finally, someone can explain it to me. Like, yeah, like that's so right. Like, if you can isolate that problem, it makes them feel like, yeah, I can get on board of that problem. It might not even be the right thing to say, but it's like their natural psychology wants to go there as well. Point at something like that, then they can say, yeah, that's so true. You're not going to linger on it and kind of like really pull on it too much, but it's just like enough of a throwaway comment but for them to just get on board with that same difficulty as well. So it does become this enemy that you can choose. And we've kind of like focused on that super geek and that kind of millennial type that people think, yeah, it's all right for this, my son or daughter to do this because they know all this stuff, but I don't. And so it feels like, ah, you know my problem, and hopefully then you're going to be able to help me fix it as well.
Yeah, because they probably thought more than a few times, oh, damn, these people, they just, it's like when they pick up a new device, you just hand it to a kid, they'll show you how it works.
Yeah.
You can feel like you're out of touch. Like my parent, they feel frustrated that, you know, with technology, phones and things can really get them annoyed. And when I go and check their accounts and things, I find that it's my niece's account. You know, this 12-year-old computer whiz has set up all their stuff for them. So they've figured it out. They were definitely, complexity frustrates people. So I can see that you're onto something with that script. So we've got the difficulty.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So then we move on to the U, to adjudicate. And the U is an understanding. We've kind of helped them with the understanding, but now you're aligning with the viewer. So you're letting them know that you understand their emotions. And it's more of a feeling here. So it is the feelings, it's the emotion. It's not like I understand your scenario of like actually what's happening in the world. We've just kind of framed that slightly in the difficulty, but with the you and the understanding of the emotion, it's more like, yeah, I know how that feels. And it feels like this. If you can describe again the feeling to somebody, again, that kind of like it makes them feel like, okay, great, you actually know how I feel, but you know my scenario and you know how I feel. Great. You're ticking all the boxes for me to get closer and closer to you as a presenter.
Right. Emotional.
I mean, we've got 90 seconds and sometimes we can get this down to 60 seconds. So we're looking to kind of like really get one or two sentences maximum. So don't overstress yourself if you're writing a script yourself as we go through this. It's more a case of you're wanting to just kind of make a few notes at this stage and think, cool, I kind of feel like I know what their emotions are. That's good enough for now. We'll come back and start writing the script afterwards.
Yeah, it reminds me of that feel, felt, found sales methodology that we learn in sales. Mm. Are you familiar with that one?
Yeah, I have heard that, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, Tom, we've had a number of people feel that way. So once we've got the understanding happening, I guess we move on to the C.
Yeah, so the C comes down to credibility. So at this point, it's a nice feed in from the U anyway, from the understanding. So you're going from like, hey, look, I understand where you're at. And then you can build the credibility at this point. Because it's a nice follow on. It's like a nice bridge to pull us into kind of helping them out at this stage. So the credibility is like, look, I've been there. In fact, I've done this with so many clients and I've helped them through the same process as well. And you can drop in anything there that you think would be the power credibility thing to give away. It's only a tick in the viewer's mind. So they can feel like, remember, you've already got them to a point where they think, okay, great. You know my difficulty better than I do. That's great. And you understand how I feel. The credibility point at this point, they almost want to trust you, but they don't yet, so to speak. They're getting closer. But as soon as you give them like a credibility hit, then they're like, oh, great. You are the expert then. And it could be like, great, you're an author, James. You've spoken on loads of stages. That's great because you can just quickly show the book or you can show you standing on stage in the video itself. So it's kind of like, you don't have to say some of this stuff. You can kind of like have it as a throwaway. You can say, look, I actually was speaking about this on kind of like wherever you were recently to 500 people. And we found that pretty much everyone in the room had exactly this problem. And as soon as you show a picture of that, your view on stage, again, huge amount of credibility. That's just a tick in their box. They've kind of like, great, we know that you're the expert. I'm ready to listen to what you have to say at this point.
Nice. So it's whatever that positioning thing is that instantly establishes you. It might be someone who you've worked with, who everyone recognizes. It could, no, does this fall under the celebrity endorsement thing as well for some people?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I know that like mentioning like clients we've worked with and kind of like maybe kind of allude to a case study or something like along those lines that you've helped someone or go from the like ground up. You can go from like, here's what, how I helped one person, or up to the point where you're like, here's how I've helped thousands of people, or who kind of like awards you've won or presentations you've given. It could be anything, because remember, the viewer is kind of cheering for you at this point to be like, come on, give me some credibility so I can just say, great, you're the expert. You're just giving them that kind of like tick in the box, so to speak. And so there's no need to overdo it here. There's no need to be like, hey, look, I've done this and I've done this and I've done this. Like, they don't need that. They just want a quick like, cool, you are the best. Well, you are very, very good at this. So they feel very comfortable with that.
Perfect. All right. So we're now credible. I guess we're into A.
Yeah. So the A is now your action plan. So you built upon the credibility to say, hey, look, I can help you. So you've positioned yourself as someone actually who can help them. And then you say, and do you know what? Having helped so many people, I know that the action plan of this three-step thing that we do can really help you. Now, the important thing about this action plan is that if it's like a seven-step plan, make it three steps. I know that's sometimes hard for people to do, but like, remember, this is the first experience a lot of people have ever seen of you. And seven things for them to hold onto in their mind is too much, especially when it's an ad that they can't go forward and back on. It's not going to be hugely kind of like a huge level of education in the ad in terms of like, it's not going to be a 30-minute ad or something like that. It's going to be like 60 to 90 seconds. So you just want to say that there is an action plan that they can use. You've got a method. You've got something that can actually help them. So it feels like, great, what is that plan? Like, what is the thing? And if it feels like three steps, it feels easy. And every script I've ever done, I've been able to break it down so it can be a three-step thing. Sometimes we'll go to four steps, and there's a reason we do that sometimes as well. You get extra bonus points at this point if you can make someone feel like they've already done step one. So say, for example, you like step one for you, James, might be something like, okay, step one, you've got to find something that you know people will find valuable that you can share with the world, something or something along those lines.
Right. So they've already got that. So they've, I was being too cheeky thinking, well, step one, you've got to be able to watch YouTube videos.
Yes. I mean, I've done that one before. I could be like, first you need to kind of like, I think it's something like, first being aware that there's a solution to this problem is number one. And so it's like, and by watching this video, you know there is a solution, something, so you can do this.
Yeah, I was thinking I'd be probably too hopeful if I said that step three for the action plan is to stop watching so many YouTube videos. Yes. Knowing that's where my target likes to hang out. Okay, so something that they've already got that they can utilize. So they'll be like saying to someone, oh, look, you could build this amazing paper airplane. Step one is to see if you've got any photocopy paper sitting around your office.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And most people are like, oh, I've got that straight away.
Oh, I can play this game.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason being, there's a lot of studies on this, but as soon as someone perceives they've already started momentum, they'll carry on, so much more likely to carry on. So you see this at places like cafes and things. They don't just give you... Oh, they've done tests on this actually, where they say, hey, we've got a loyalty program and it's just going to stamp your card. And if you bring it back in once it's filled out, you can get a free coffee.
They pre-stamp it.
Yeah, exactly. So they've done a lot of studies where it's like, they give them the loyalty card and they say, hey, look, there's eight to get and don't stamp them. Or they'll say, here's a loyalty card, there's 10 to get, but we're going to stamp your first two. So it feels exactly, it should feel exactly the same, but it doesn't, because as soon as you've got the two on there, you're like, okay, I've already started. I'm going to put that in my wallet and it's not going to go anywhere. And so next time I come here, I'm going to make sure I get stamped again. And so many more people are likely to take that action. So in the same way, when you share an action plan that you've got for somebody, if you can make it a three or four step plan and say, hey, first thing you need to do, and it's something they've already got or done, it's like, make sure you've got an idea that you know is going to be like, that fills you with passion and you know that would be valuable for other people. Great. I've got that. That's great. I'm already on the road to success. It's amazing. Something that's kind of what you want people to feel like at that point.
That's amazing. So, gee, we're coming into the home straight now. What's the T?
Yes. Well, so the T would become a little bit more teaching around this. So remember, people come to YouTube because they want to learn something. Now, when I say teaching, it doesn't need, I mean, we only got 90 seconds, so it's not long. So at this point, you want to share with them, you know, sometimes when you give something, you may have said something to somebody before, James, where you say it and they're like, oh my God, that's so true. Or it could be a sentence or something like that. So you're going to unpack the three-step formula you've given previously, just to give a little bit more detail. Now, you can do this in like step one, do this, and you might give a little bit more information there. So it can be like, stop doing this, because if you keep doing this, you're going to find that this is your problem. And so it's like, oh my God, yeah, that is so true. I need to find out more information about that. So you're giving them like this, unpacking this three-step formula and just giving like the highlight away. So it makes them realize that there's even more value inside of this three-step program that they probably haven't realized before. That's kind of like, it's not teaching per se in terms of like kind of sitting there and walking it through. You're going to do that in the next step. so to speak, or in the book they're going to buy or whatever it is. So in the book that you might have, you might say, okay, step one is to do this. And in fact, on page 17 of my book, and you can almost open up and show them sort of thing, you can say, you can see this chapter beginning, we're going to walk you through how to do this, this, and this, or something along those lines. Like, oh my God, yeah, I need to learn that stuff. Or you might say, there's a definite plan you want to follow in this first phase, and it's going to be making sure you do this, and then this, and then this. And there's a reason why you do it in that order. It could be like it's really just a couple of sentences just to unpack that first part of that action plan. Now, depending on how it feels when you kind of come back to writing the script, you can do it so it's in the action plan. You can do a bit of teaching per point. So you can say, step one, do this. And here's what we're going to do it. In page 17, you're going to get this. Step two, you're going to do this. And so you can do it that way. Or you can do, here's the action plan. First, you're going to do this. Second of it, you're going to do this. And third, you're going to do this. Now, let me show you a little bit more information. And actually, let me show you someone who's implemented this in the past. So you could even do a little case study there as well. So you can say, Julie, I coached Julie and showed her these three-step model. And look what she did. First of all, she did this. There we go. Second of all, she did this because I told her to do that. And third of all, she did this. And look at the results she's got. So you can unpack it in a real quick case study. So they're like, oh, wow, if Julie can do it, I could do it too. And that's kind of like you're just doing it's unpacking the action plan a little bit to give them a bit of teaching.
Right. So you basically expanded out your 3 points into useful information.
Exactly. Yeah. That probably would have been a much more concise way of saying it than what I went through.
Basically, it's like I'm thinking in terms of a book, it'd be like the contents table, and then you'd flip to the chapter to find out more about that.
Yeah, exactly. And you want to, if you got the book there, I might not show the contents table just because if you've said, hey, there's a 3-step action plan to this, I might just move straight away.
And there's 9 chapters or so.
It's a bit of a disconnect between what your book is and what you've said the action plan is. So I might just turn to like a chapter and say, hey, look, in this chapter, it's going to cover this second part, for example. I mean, your action plan, your 3-step action plan or your 4-step action plan should definitely be part of the book, of course. Don't like say, hey, it's the 3-step action plan and then it's nothing to do with the book whatsoever. Make sure there is exactly the same. But it's just like that visual representation when you show the chapters or the title of the content.
Well, in my case, there are 4 main areas that I would segment my audience into generally. So I'd usually talk about those 4 buckets, as Ryan Levesque mm-hmm. would talk about. And within those buckets, there are sort of sub-segments or sub-things that people could do. So if scaling and building a team is one of the segments that I typically encounter with people who I work with, there's an entire chapter on building a team. But there's also chapters related to that that you could bundle together. But, you know, building a team is a chapter in the book, and building a team might be one of the 3 steps that a business would need to engage to go from solopreneur to a real business.
Nice.
So it kind of could marry up, right?
Perfect. That's exactly it. That's great. And then, so you've done this teaching section, and then we're going to get to the E, which is like the exit point of the video. This is kind of like a call to action. And I tend to try and bridge it with a statement that I've used subtly for many years. So this actually comes from Robert Cialdini, and this is the one way to get real quick trust. A lot of people feel like trust can only really be built when you have a relationship with someone, and it's kind of like it's a good relationship, and it's kind of over time it just generates because there's a lot of interaction and et cetera, and you just build that trust over time. But you can shortcut it with a statement. Now, the way you do this is you're going to highlight a slight weakness, or not a weakness, but maybe a drawback, for example, that is obvious. So like, for example, this might not happen overnight for these people. It might take a bit of learning, for example. That could be a slight drawback, or you might think of other drawbacks. It might be a little bit of hard work that needs to be put into this or something. So you're being honest with somebody, and you also need to use one of the strongest elements of your argument, so to speak. It's kind of like, what is the reason why this is just so powerful? How is it that this action plan or whatever you share with people, what's the most powerful thing you can mention that makes them go, yeah, that's kind of exactly why this is so good for me?
So this is the big idea or the hook?
Yeah, I'll give an example. Cialdini talked about, there's like a meeting, I'll do a very bad job of paraphrasing this, but there's an annual general meeting with a company, and they were in a bit of financial stress, and they had to talk to the shareholders after this meeting. And one of the spokespeople came out after the meeting and said, look, the financial review looks really good, but it's going to take a long time to implement. Now, completely honest, and kind of wanted to like mention there's some good stuff and some bad stuff. But as I say that, if you came out and said the financial review looks really good, but it's going to take a long time to implement, everybody, it feels negative. It doesn't feel good at all. And it feels like you might not necessarily trust that spokesperson. But if you flip it around and you say, look, it might take a long time to implement, but the financial review looks really good. At that point, it feels so much better, because the word but is really, really powerful. What you're doing with the word but is you're negating what you've just said in the mind of the listener, and you're strengthening what you're about to say. That always happens that way. You've probably had it before where someone gives you feedback. I know I've had this in the past, especially when I was in my school days, where they say something like, look, that's really, really good, Tom, but what I'd recommend you do instead is this. And all you're left with is like, okay, what I've just done is crap. That's what it makes you feel like.
Well, actually, I refer to that in the book. I call that a shit sandwich.
Yeah,
it's where
exactly.
They put the positive and then the negative and then try and clean it up with the positive.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
I really like how you polish your shoes. Yes. It's called pairing, and it's a tremendously bad idea when you're giving feedback. And I agree with you, but it does cancel out what came before it. So we would put the bad news should always go first because the good news will look better by comparison. So I think you were talking about a technique that I've heard before called the damaging admission.
It's, yeah, exactly. I like to call it the power of your butt just because it's more my way of talking.
You know, when I was selling motor vehicles, which doesn't sound good when I talk about it now, actually. Shit, I was a car salesman. No, but in all reality, though, I would point out the flaws of a vehicle to a prospective buyer and they would definitely appreciate that. They would feel that you're being upfront with them, which is very rare in that industry. In fact, I'll just go so far as to say that there are bandits in every single industry. It's just that some industries where they deal with the public get more exposure.
Yeah.
And there are certainly some lower quality people that you can attract to jobs where you have to work weekends as well. That does factor into it with less academic qualifications. Mm. Okay, so moving on from that traumatic situation. The E stands for?
So the E is the exit. So the bridge between this is like to say, mention a slight drawback that you know is pretty obvious to the viewer. So it's like, look, this might take a little bit of time to implement, or there's some hard work ahead of you, but this is the clearest path from someone who knows what they're doing, something along those lines. So it feels like you're being honest with them, and then you're negating the negativity of that, and you're strengthening it with the positive as well.
So it's addressing their natural criticism.
Exactly.
The element of scrutiny, like, you know, what's the catch?
Exactly. Yeah. And so it just addresses that, gets them past that, and it leads you nicely into the next section, which is the kind of the exit, which is where your call to action happens. And at this point, you've got to make sure that you what you're offering at the end of the video is something that's very congruent with what you've been talking about, of course, and also is the logical next step. Because by this point, you want people to be like, this has been great. I love this video. What's the next step? If you can get people to that point by the end of this, by this point of the video, the call to action just becomes a natural thing. And we want to show them what to do next. This is where clarity, and this is the point where I shoot this part of the video probably 50 times, maybe, to make sure that I just absolutely perfect this. If I'm doing a video of any sort for anything, I'll just be like, right, the call to action needs to be done in a really clear way. So you would mention exactly what you've got for them. You may have already mentioned it because you've already like highlighted the book, for example, in the three-step plan and kind of some of the areas that you've been talking about. So you say, look, this is the book and this is the offer that we have on today, so to speak, however you want to promote that offer, so to speak. Obviously, you would have thought about that prior to writing the ad. You want it to be really clear with people to say, here's what we've got and here's how you're going to benefit should you do this. And here's maybe some of the consequences should you not do it. Now, when I say that bit, the consequences should you not do it, you can go hard on that if you want to. That doesn't fit my personality at all. So I make that very, very subtle. I'll write down in my notes, here's what they potentially stand to lose if they don't buy this book. But then when I actually write the script out, I would be trying to make that a little bit subtle because it's just not my style to be like, hey, if you don't get this today, you are going to be the worst person ever, something or whatever it might be. I just try and integrate it so it's a subtle enough cue to be like, look, go and buy the book. It's the obvious thing to do. And don't stick around with kind of like how you are, like don't stick with how you are right now. But I try and associate that with their identity, or at least how they want to be perceived as their identity. So, I mean, I'll do a bad example now, but like if they want to become like an entrepreneur in this scenario, they want to be like, hey, look, my mindset is to become a business owner who's really profitable, doing really well. Then you would easily associate that with like, okay, well, good business owners and people who get the best, who are able to get the best results are people that take action, people that do this stuff and actually go in. They don't just sit there and think, oh, maybe one day they.
So this is Cialdini's labeling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're labeling the person to say, these people do this. The person that you want to become does this, and therefore you should take this call to action, so to speak. You're kind of like aligning it so they, in their head, they're like, yes, I want to become that person, or I agree with being that person, and that sort of person would take this call to action. So you're kind of aligning it with their identity.
Right. That sounds good. So it's like, Tom, people who are really successful are very generous. Could I borrow £10?
Precisely. Yeah, exactly. Oh, you could even say, can I borrow £1,000? I'm like, well, yeah, well, can I borrow 100 then? I'm like, okay, fine. 100 is fine compared to 1,000.
you're quite sophisticated with this, and I imagine these subtle differences will be the sorts of things that can change the results from a campaign from losers to winners. Yeah,
if you get a good ad, the very ROI of a campaign can be very, very fine sometimes. And that's sometimes, like, if you say, for example, oh, we're 10% positive, so for every $9 we spend, we get $10 back, for example. With a good ad, you might get that down to, let's say, 80% or 70% or something like that. So for every $7 you spend, you get $10 back, for example. With a really good ad written, like similar to how we've talked about here, if you get that absolutely nailed and you think, right, I've got this down and like I feel really comfortable with this, and it does perform like that, that margin when you're advertising is huge, because the kind of the knock-on effect of it means that you can advertise in spaces that maybe you wouldn't have been able to have done before, because you can start spreading your message a little bit wider, and now what's costing you $9 to get $10 back would have been costing you $1.20 to get $1 back, so you would have been at a loss. So you can start to scale out a lot more, still being ROI positive, and like it just makes the whole campaign so much easier to run if you have a good ad. And it's fine margins sometimes. Like we might write like four different versions of an ad because we're like, I'm not sure if we're pulling on the right enemy here, or we're not sure if we've kind of like said the aim exactly right. So we might kind of create a few different sections of this and say, well, let's pull on this aim, and then we'll do another video pulling on this aim, and it kind of be the same after that, but you kind of just like keep kind of trying out different ideas at different sections of your video. But that's the great thing about this, because it's kind of down into these 7 points. Educate would be like the 7 points here. They can be filmed in such a way where you just film that clip, and then you kind of like, so as you're presenting it, you say, okay, I'm just going to get this A done, the aim right, and then you film that bit, and it, cool, okay, what's the next bit? D, okay, difficulty. Let's film that section now. So you can film it section by section, and when you edit it together, you can then have different parts at different sections. It should all still make sense as you go through it, of course, but it means you can just test out different intros or test out different action plans or whatever you wanted to test out. And you'll find that there's small margins, but one can beat another, like one ad can beat another ad by huge results sometimes. We've had ads that are like, you think, oh, I'm not sure which one's going to win, A or B. And B might outperform A by like 17 times. It's crazy how much of a big change will happen. And it's not, I mean, I go into markets like this and just, I realize the more I know, almost like the more I know I don't know, which just sounds like an odd thing to say. But I'm just happy to say, right, this is a good formula. It's worked like loads and loads of times before. And I know it pulls on a lot of scientific research and all the stats that we've got before in the past and everything else. But I still know going into this market, I'm not sure whether this will work or whether this works. So, but the beauty of it, it's not like TV. You don't have to put all your eggs into one basket with one ad. You can have 4 ads or 5 ads or whatever you wanted to do and run them all together at the same time and spend kind of $10 and get some data in. Do you know what I mean? So we live in a really exciting time where you can put a bit more effort into the video creation and then see what works for you and do just like an ABC split test or something along those lines. Stick 3 video ads and see which one works best and then just stick with the winner. So it means that you don't have to kind of get it perfect first time, because once you do this video, this is the beauty of it, it's like once you do this video, you're going to start getting data in, you're going to start to see where your ad's performing well, and so when you start looking at that analysis of that data, you'll be like, hey, that's interesting. And we just did this for a weight loss client, in fact. We ran the ad and then we noticed that some of the best videos we were getting results on was where people were typing in weight loss journey, which you hadn't really thought of before. But on YouTube, people were like loving watching people's journeys from being a certain weight, losing a load of weight, and then looking like this. They love watching that content and they want to be the same person having that same weight loss journey. And so we realized that with the stats and the data and the analysis, and we're like, do you know what? We're getting really good results from when people type in weight loss journey or watching videos around weight loss journey. And so we said, why don't we create a video that pulls on that? And so like the action plan then becomes like, okay, here's our 3-step action plan for your weight loss journey. And we just found that we would never have known that before going in, but with the analysis we go and create more videos, and it has a massive difference on the performance of the ads. So you don't need to get it perfect, because you're going to always be improving it, and so just go with like the best you can from like the Educate process here. But you're going to be creating a far better ad doing it that way than just by using the traditional copywriting techniques or anything like that.
Right, so what I'm hearing is we should maybe create 2 or 3 versions and we could upload them and test them against each other.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So what else do we need to know? So this ad's going to be running there. We've got a call to action. Just so that I can get clarity on this, is the call to action to subscribe to the channel, or is this something else? Because I know that you're saying that might be one of our goals if we wanted to build awareness, is to build subscribers. Are we using videos like this to tell people to subscribe to the channel, and then we're using videos like this to tell them to go and download the book, or are they different types of ads?
Both, and with tweaks. So the structure will be the same for a good ad, because once you've kind of got your notes down, then you'll go and write it out, like make sure you write out your ad, and then you'll start realizing that when you've written it out, it's going to be like 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes or something along those lines. And so you start needing to condensing down, and that will be kind of like the process of going through this. So one, get all the notes down. Two, kind of write it all out. And three, start heavily condensing it. And that's the three-step action plan. When you do that, let's say, for example, you're going for a subscriber, my action plan would be telling, it would almost be like the call to action. Be like, okay, step one, you're going to subscribe to this channel by clicking the button displaying on the video. Step two, I'm going to send you a load of videos every single day or every single week. You're going to get 3 videos a week or something like that, teaching you methods in business that are working incredibly well to help you kind of whatever that kind of like step two are going to be. And step three, be like, just start implementing some of this stuff in your business. You're going to see profound results. So, and then you move into the statement of the but, the power of your but statement. And then you go into the exit at that point, which would be like, so hit the button right now, subscribe to the channel, and you'll be getting more videos from me very soon. So you can kind of do it that way for a subscriber. If you're going to do it for the book sale, you would kind of obviously then go for the route of like saying, step one might be find your niche or whatever it is. Step two might be whatever the next step is going to be, the 4 steps that you talked about earlier. So you can bring that into play and then say, right, now go and buy the book. So I'll just kind of like keep an idea of what your end goal is in mind when you first start creating the ad. Is it to get a subscriber? Is it to get someone to buy the book? But you can, the aggregate process still works. But if you're going for a subscriber, I'll probably go for a slightly shorter video because you're asking for a micro commitment from somebody. So it doesn't need quite so much selling. So I might try and keep it down to like 30 to 45 seconds, for example, to get that subscriber button hit, so to speak. And
are there different ad costs for different lengths of ads? Do they come in like 30, 45, 60, 90?
No, yeah. So as soon as someone watches past 30 seconds of an in-stream ad, you pay as soon as someone watches past 30 seconds. So that's what happens on with the in-stream ads. So they're the ones like the pre-roll ads on YouTube. And then the other ones where you see the thumbnail, the sponsored like promotional thumbnail at the top of the search results or on the right-hand side, they're called discovery ads. And you pay as soon as someone decides to click play on your video. But it doesn't matter the length of your video, you'll pay the same amount.
Right. So you just think it's going to be somewhere between 30 and 90 seconds?
Yeah, I would say for a subscriber video, 30 to 45 seconds. But if it's 50 seconds and it's still really good and concise, great, go for it. If you're pitching the book, it depends. So it depends on the landing page. If your landing page has a video on it as well, I might shorten the video on the YouTube.
And just get that handshake.
Exactly. You just say, hey, look, all we're doing is get the click so they can go and watch the video and they're going to engage with on the website, for example. Whereas if it's straight to like a sales page for the book, I might kind of do a bit more work in the video.
Perfect. Okay. So what else is there? We've talked about why you should be there. We've talked about what you're going to be making to attract people to your channel and then to attract people to take a more specific call to action. We have gone through your educate framework, which was fantastic. Just for a summary there, that was aim, difficulty, understanding, credibility, action plan, teaching, then exit. And we talked about the idea of putting a few different versions of your video in a test with each other. And we talked about the optimal length. Now, I guess the next thing is we're going to have to log in somewhere and upload these videos and start a campaign. And that's probably a little more in depth than where we can get to in this particular segment. But presumably that's done somewhere in AdWords.
Yeah, so you're going to upload your video to YouTube, into your YouTube channel. And you're going to want to make sure that you've got like a link at the end of your video inside of the YouTube channel. There's something called end screens, which are like clickable links inside your videos. So whether someone's watching on a mobile or on a desktop, they can just click a link inside the video and it'll take them to the website. You can set that up pretty easy if you go and look at the YouTube interface. Once you've uploaded your video, it's pretty simple. But then once the video's there, you would then use your AdWords account to promote that video. So a bit like how it works on Facebook, for example, if you're familiar with Facebook, you've got your kind of like your ad campaign inside of Facebook, then obviously the ads will be appearing in people's Facebook news feeds. But with AdWords, when you log in, you're just going to be focusing on video campaigns. And the campaigns that I like to focus on, it can get quite technical. And when we talk about it on the podcast without kind of like showing on a video, so to speak, and showing you how to do that. But the way in which the best campaigns normally that we would run would be like for this type of thing, when you first get started, like a placement campaign, which is where you literally select the videos you want your ad to appear in front of. So you can say, right, all the videos by this person, I want my ad to run in front of, or all the videos about this content, I want to run my ad in front of. And we have a tool that kind of grabs loads of these placements really quickly. So you can say, right, by keyword, let's say, for example, you were wanting to get in front of people that are saying how to scale my business. Let's say, for example, you could type in the word how to scale my business, and then the bit of software will give you 50, 100 1,000 URLs on YouTube of all the different videos out there about that content. And it'd be like ranking order. So obviously, if you grabbed 1,000 for that, you might find that you get a bit irrelevant after 500. So you want to be keeping an eye on that. But you can grab all those URLs and dump them into your AdWords campaign. And it means your ad will run in front of any of those videos that show ads. And that's a great place to get started because it's normally quite cheap, but it's super targeted as well. Because then inside of your campaigns, you can decide to stop running your ads on those placements that don't work. And you can scale up those placements that do work for you. So if you saw like your ad was running in front of, I don't know, a TED talk, for example, and it was working really well for you, you may be able to up the bid price and you can say, right, per view, I want to spend more now, and you get more scale there. But if you had another ad running in front of, let's say, some randomer's kind of video on YouTube about how to scale your business and it wasn't working well for you because it's a terrible video, you might say, okay, great, well, let's stop running ads on that channel or on that video. And you'll just see all the data in front of you. So you can say, right, it'll just tell you how much you're paying to acquire a new customer in your AdWords account. And so it's brilliant. You can just say, right, of these 500 video URLs that I want to be advertising in front of, only 100 of them are working for me. Great, turn off 400 then. You don't have to advertise those ones. And then just spend a bit more money on those 100. And then you go and get 500 more and go test those on a new keyword and 500 more on someone else's channel, for example.
This is where you're getting some serious scale. It might be worth having a chat to Tom.
Yeah, we're getting a bit complicated at this point, yeah. So
we're starting to glaze over now.
Okay.
It's good. I could at least work on the video part and then load it to the channel with the, did you call it a endless green?
Oh, I know. an end screen.
An end screen. That reminds me when I was learning tennis, I had an Asian coach, and for years I thought that the back of the court was called the bear's line. Go to the bear's line. And right. So gotcha. We'll correct that one. It's all new.
That's probably my English accent. I apologize.
You don't get more English than English, do you? So that's excellent. End screen. We're the ones with the distorted accent.
Well, do you know, I always get, whenever I speak on stage, people come up to me and say, oh, so how long did it take you to get from here from Australia? No, I'm British. and after a while, I'm like, yeah, okay, it took me 10 hours to fly. So I just give up.
Nice. Okay, well, Tom, I think that's been very helpful. So now I've got a nice framework to work with and I have an understanding of the overall process and what needs to be done. So, wow, how to promote your book on YouTube. I think that this has been remarkably helpful. Tom, where can people find out about what you've got cooking? I know you've got a book on the way, so this hasn't been a completely wasted discussion for you, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've got a book coming out called Viewability. And it'll be out in, I believe it's going to be like February or March time. I keep on tinkering with the book, so it might be later than that even. But yeah, so it's called Viewability, and that is also the name of the agency as well. So it's viewability.co.uk is the website. And if people want to have a chat with me, that's probably where I'm going to be hanging out. Otherwise, I'll be on Facebook and YouTube.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks so much, James.
All right. If you enjoyed this show, be sure to leave a comment or give it a review on iTunes. Appreciate that. If you want to get my book, Work Less, Make More, you can go to Amazon and grab it. If you don't, you'll probably see some YouTube ads in a short time from now where you'll be tempted to get it using Tom's seductive framework, which we'll publish on this post and co-credit Tom as well, of course, and a link to his website. You'll be able to check out the Educate framework, and it's been a blast. So we'll see you on the next show.
Thanks, James.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.